Thanks so much to Datadog for sponsoring Does Not Compute. Datadog is a SaaS monitoring analytics platform that provides developers and DevOps teams with a unified view of their infrastructure metrics, distributed application traces, and logs all in one platform. So Datadog is not just a log collection service. It actually monitors your application from end to end, from the front end to the database and your application and everything in between. So it lets you take a deep dive into individual traces that touch every part of your application. Their application performance monitoring feature lets you identify, analyze, and resolve performance issues all the way down to the code level for Python, Ruby, Go, Java, and Node.js applications. Out of the box, it actually will even automatically detect and alert you of any anomalous performance behaviors with no configuration at all. And sometimes you just need to dig into a boring old log file. Well, there's a Log Explorer, which has real-time log search and analytics built right in. It's really easy to get started. There's over 250 turnkey integrations for things like AWS, Nginx, Kubernetes, Slack, and so much more. And installing the Datadog client, I've done it before. It's literally just a one-line command on your server. It's really, really fast. So Datadog is offering DNC listeners a free trial, and as added bonus for signing up and creating a dashboard, they'll even send you a free Datadog t-shirt. You can start a free trial today at datadog.com/doesnotcompute, and Datadog will send you a free t-shirt. That's pretty cool. Again, that's datadog.com/doesnotcompute.
It's hot. It's hot. Actually, it is hot today. I didn't like that.
Dude, yeah, I had to wear shorts today.
I didn't like it.
I was at the car dealership picking up my new car, and the sales guy that was helping me was like, yeah, it's really cold in the office, and it's been really cloudy, so like, and he's wearing like corduroy pants and like a sweater vest, and we're standing out in the parking lot, and it's 80 degrees, and he's just dying. He's like, oh yeah, check out this new features of the car. I'm like, don't sweat on my new car.
That's pretty... Yeah.
No, it was just, I feel sorry for him because he was, yeah, it was rough.
It was rough.
But, you know, back to autumn, I think, tomorrow.
I always feel less productive when it's warm out, which is kind of funny. I don't know why. Maybe, I don't know. I feel like a slug, like I need to lay down on a rock.
Like you're leaving a trail of just like sweat behind you.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to figure out how to live my best programming life. If that's just taking the afternoons off because I don't do crap. I'm around, but I don't feel like I accomplish anything. But for some reason at night, I feel much more aware and much more at peace with sitting at a desk and having to do something. Just less trepidation there. So I don't know. I've been contemplating taking a few hours out in the afternoon so I can go outside and do something outside and then come back and accomplish some things. I feel like if I'm coming back later, it's easier for me to have an intention of saying I need to do A, B, and C. Whereas if I start working in the morning and that just continues on into the afternoon, it feels easy for me to have tasks get muddied as people start talking to me and I have to be on calls, and it's harder for me to stay focused. I think really, I guess that's the main issue, is being able to focus. And I think that's been compounded in the last 2 weeks by the stuff I've been working on, because it's a very big refactor at the same time as like a really big feature add for DK, which I've talked about before at the companies, and it's so close, but I feel like I'm lacking the focus during the day to just get it over the finish line.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but kind of the way you're describing it sounds similar to how I feel. And that's like, even if you know that you can be interrupted, that alone is distracting enough,
mm-hmm.
right? Like even if you're not, someone's not actively messaging you on Slack or Spectrum or wherever, right? Like even if people aren't actively bothering you, there's still that like back of your mind, like what if I get interrupted right now? Mm-hmm. I'm gonna have to, you know, pick it back up. And when I'm working at night, like after hours, you know, basically after dinner time, right? There's zero of that, right? Like I can just sit down, put on my headphones, the lights are low, like set the mood, put on some music. But I know that there's not even an inkling of a doubt that my flow will be interrupted for the next 2 to 6 hours, right? Or whatever it is.
Yeah. Like I'm happy taking a shot of my the coffee thing that I use. I can't remember what it's called. Jamie, what's it called? The AeroPress. Thank you.
Real time follow up.
I'm struggling right now. Yeah, real-time follow-up. The AeroPress, if you haven't gotten one, I'll put the link to an AeroPress unit in the show notes.
Sounds like you need one of those right now.
I debated, but I was already 10 minutes late, so I figured let's just soldier on. Anyhow, I'm perfectly happy taking a shot of my AeroPress and sitting down for a few hours and really kind of getting some uninterrupted time in. So I don't know if, yeah, maybe that's what I'm thinking. Like, I need to adjust my schedule a little bit. And it helps that Jamie has a lot of homework to do at night, so I don't feel guilty for working when she's not working or around. So I don't know. Well, maybe I'll make that into an experiment and see what happens. But I think some of that is just like pressure because Paul's been shipping so much stuff, and I feel like I haven't shipped anything in like a month. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's tough designing your own schedule, especially when you're working remotely and you do have the flexibility to do that sort of stuff, but you also have to, you know, be available for calls and to help support people, right? Like, people need to be able to reach you.
Yeah.
So that's a tricky thing to balance. It's like, oh, you know, can you, it's this question for me, like, no, I'm out mowing my lawn. it feels irresponsible or something, you know, even though like, yeah, I'm going to make up those hours later. I'm still going to get the work in for the day.
Sure. Yeah. And I am around. So in the car when I'm going to jiu-jitsu or I'm coming back, I'll check and make sure things are okay. I think obviously that'll be a little bit different once we grow a little bit more. I think it's hard when there's only a couple of you to, I don't want Paul to have to be on the clock all the time, basically, or like on weekends and things like that. So I try to step in there and take some of the load there, but yeah, not to pull you into my therapy hour, but this is my therapy hour today. I think that's partly what it is. And it's partly, I don't know, trying to think about working smarter, not harder, instead of like trying to, I've spent so many years just brute forcing through a day when I don't feel like I am doing anything useful. It seems to make more sense. Like if I'm not doing anything useful, but I'm wasting the company's time or I'm using the company's time, why wouldn't I go to the gym or something and exercise or do something beneficial to myself and then come back later? And it's more efficient, I guess, for the company's time. And it's, I guess, startup, like, I'm not trying to say like, oh, my startup is the most important thing in my life, because it's not and it shouldn't be. But there's a sense of like, we have to keep moving fast. We have competitors that have a lot of money and hundreds of employees, you know. And that's another thing, another interesting thing too, is like, you know, in communicating timelines and time frames. And it's interesting talking with a team that's familiar with our competition, and our smallest competitor maybe has like 80 employees and we have 5.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like all of these things maybe kind of adding up into all that stuff. Maybe we can relate this into being a CTO or, you know, working for a small company or whatever it is. But I guess that's what I'm looking for, is like, how do I work smarter, not harder, and not have to like feel like I'm sludging through stuff, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Especially in this stage of their company where, you know, it's not the most important thing to you, but it's still pretty important. Like you're one of the few, you know, one of the few gears in the company, right? Mm-hmm. And so like, obviously you have to have a certain baseline level of productivity and moving the product forward. So you don't want to like neglect it. You can't just like, you can't hide, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah,
right. At a big company, like, if you're having a bad week, like, you can just kind of get by and things will be okay. But you can't really afford to do that so much at this stage where you guys are, you know?
I mean, who else is going to pick up the slack, right? There's nobody.
Exactly.
There's not anybody. Yeah. So,
well, you can always hire me.
I could. I mean, if I had the money, I would.
If I had the time, I would. So,
yeah. Yeah, things, I mean, like, in the grand scheme of things are going well. Like, we're growing, we're getting new customers, we're getting positive feedback, we're moving forward, which is all you can ask, and that's good. So I think part of it too, and I've talked about this a lot over the arc of Does Not Compute, pre and maybe a little bit post Rockwell, in like learning when you need to come up for air and look at things at a holistic view, like look at things as a whole instead of, I think part of it is like, I've been working on the stuff I'm working on like this week has been a lot of plumbing things. So it's a lot of like wiring and plumbing, and it doesn't feel like you're accomplishing much because like test results aren't necessarily changing. UI is not changing. Things aren't necessarily getting better. They're just different. So it feels like you're toiling in the mines, I guess. So maybe that's a time where I need to think about, like, come back and think about the whole picture.
You need like a little a canary, maybe rubber duck.
Yeah,
rubber duck canary.
Yeah. Yeah, how have you been? Because I'm just babbling about work.
No, babbling's good. We're babbling together. No, things have been going good here. I've actually started working as a new, I guess, side gig, new consulting job that I'm starting now. And I don't think I've mentioned it before on the show. So the company I'm working for is called Glance, glance.net, I believe. And what they do is basically, in a nutshell, it's like screen sharing application, but like really, really, really easy one. Like it's stupid how nice and easy it is. We actually use it for remote ham radio. Whenever we need to like troubleshoot someone's computer, we just say, hey, go to Glance. It downloads a little client and runs it. And then like instantly we can like, you know, see and control their screen, and like people can figure it out. So
that's cool.
Yeah, it's a really nice product. And they have like Cobrowse, which is more of like a marketing tool. So like, you know, you can help like walk people through products or, you know, that kind of stuff, or using software, right?
Yeah.
As a support tool, basically. So they have all kinds of other cool stuff coming down the pipe, apparently. I don't really know. But so what I've been working with, so my business partner with Remote Ham Radio, he also works for Glance, and so now we're working together at Glance. And what we're doing is just basically streamlining their DevOps setup. So like they have this really, really long history of, back when, actually not that long ago, maybe 2-3 years ago now, like they had like physical hardware sitting in data centers, right? They had a cage, a physical cage in Boston that like they only had the key to, right?
Mm-hmm.
At a data center. There was a cage in Oakland, California, which I actually got to visit, and it was really cool. Like Lee literally, like one of the drives went bad, and so he had to fly to Oakland, right? And swap out a drive. And like these things have been like, they had dual redundancy things. They actually had them, the data center, run custom redundant power supplies from two different feeds. So in case one of them went down, they'd still have another feed. They had, you know, backup drives, backup battery backups, like just like duplicates of and triplicates of like everything. So like they had over-engineered it to a fault, and like they were never, ever, ever down, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then now like they just do everything on AWS. Like they got to a point where they could support everything on Amazon Web Services, and they literally just had some guy pack up the entire cage, ship it in a crate back to them. Like they do everything in the cloud now, right? And it's just, they saved probably half their budget just alone on that, you know?
Yeah.
Plus all the, you know, just the upkeep and the maintenance and everything, all that related with all that, and having to worry about it is, you know, that was a big win for them. But all of their build and deployment processes for their server applications were all based off of this old model, where like you had to build the application and put it into a tarball and then upload it to a server and then like, you know, install custom scripts, and like there was no, you know, virtual images or virtualization or whatever, right? So they modernized it up to a point, but it's still a very manual process, and it's very well documented. So like it's nice to have real documentation, but right now, like when like they release, they have a new version of the software every, I don't know, few months. And we're just basically streamlining that, you know, doing a full integration, you know, build the thing, and it actually spits out like a real image that you can just launch on a cluster, you know, that kind of thing, automatically scale and stuff. So that's kind of what we're working towards.
That's pretty cool that they approached you and with the idea of helping them streamline that process.
Yeah, it just came down to time, honestly. Like, they could have figured it out, but they just need a little different perspective and a little more time to spend on it, basically. So
yeah,
that's what I've been doing.
That's cool. How big is their team?
I don't really know. The company itself is pretty small, maybe 30 or to 50 people, something like that. I don't actually know. And I don't actually know how big the development team itself is, but the DevOps is basically like 2 or 3 guys.
Yeah, I'm sure they're pretty busy.
Yeah, definitely. There's the whole like, I don't want to get it too much in the specifics, but
sure.
So I've been really busy with that, and I've actually like made a lot of progress on just like the past week and a half that I've been working on it. And I learned how to use HashiCorp Packer, And you told me that you've actually used this before.
I have, yeah. I was working at Octopus at the time, and we just had a lot of our clients. I think we had done the what's only coin. There was a company called Coin, and they did one of those debit cards that had like all of your cards in one, so you could, if you usually carry.
Oh yeah, I had one of those.
Yeah, an actual coin.
Yeah, yeah.
Really? I worked on the website for that.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, with all those scrolly animations and stuff.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I don't know if you remember the website, but you scroll through the website and the card moves around the screen and it like swipes through a register and does all this stuff. Like it takes like four cards and they kind of like, as you scroll, they come from the four corners of the screen and they turn into one card and the coin card fades in. And yeah, we did that site. And then everybody for 3 years was like, we want the coin site. For like every, I'm not exaggerating, it was like almost every other person that was contacting us for work were like, we just basically want the coin site only with our logo and our, you know, people asking for reskins, which we didn't want to do. And we didn't really take any of that work, but the work that we did take where it wasn't just a reskin, they would always, like everyone just wanted a scrolling animation.
Right. That was all the hotness. I mean, still is, but it was probably like brand new.
It drove us nuts because it's not a great experience for users, really. I mean, it looks nice, but the average person, when they go to it, they're like, what is this? I wish it didn't do this, you know? That's been my experience anyway, is when I talk to actual people or send like, hey, I just worked on the site. They're like, oh, I just want to read. I don't want to like see all this stuff fly around, you know? But yeah, so I worked on that site with Paul. Paul did a lot of it, but we worked on the animations and stuff. And so we were getting a lot of clients that were wanting those kind of sites. And it was really simple. I mean, we were using Statamic quite often. And most people that came up to us were, you know, they had a really bad hosting situation. And so we actually used Packer to help us like with DigitalOcean droplets and things. So just like set up a nice staging environment pretty quickly. So that way we can... basically just automate, okay, we have a working prototype for them to check out the site, you know, let's throw it on a droplet and send them over an address. And so we used Packer actually to kind of do a lot of this stuff for us.
Nice. Yeah. And just so for people who aren't familiar, Packer, because I never heard of this before, Packer is a client utility that you run locally that will build images on cloud hosting providers. So it has a whole bunch of different providers for all the big ones, Amazon and Linode. There's probably like a dozen of them. And what it does is it basically just starts up a virtual VPS, logs into it, runs a bunch of scripts, then shuts it down and makes an image, like just takes a snapshot. That's pretty much all it does. And then there's like all the tooling around that. Basically, you know, you can copy files to it from your local box. You can run commands. You can, you know, there's a handful of other things, but those are the two big ones, right? It's kind of like a Docker file almost in the sense that, right? You're starting from scratch, but it's kind of does it remotely.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much exactly that. It worked pretty well. And at that point, I'm sure Docker was around because it wasn't that long ago. It was maybe 5 years ago. But Docker was certainly at that point over my head. And so it looked intimidating to me. And so I found Packer and I was like, this, I can understand this. It didn't seem too crazy. And they had some nice templates and stuff like that. So it worked pretty well for what we needed it to do. And yeah, it's cool. I mean, I've heard a lot of really cool things about HashiCorp. And so when you mentioned that you were using it, I was like, oh, cool. That's awesome that they're still around and they're still doing some cool stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems Packer itself seems like pretty well fleshed out and pretty well supported and pretty well documented, but like there's still little cracks here and there that seem like they'll just probably never get fixed because it doesn't seem like this gets a lot of attention. Mm-hmm. But that remains to be seen. Nothing you can't really get around by just some, you know, fancy shell scripting or whatever you need to do. But
yeah, sure.
So yeah, and the cool thing about Packer is you mentioned Docker, so like that's one of the avenues we're going to look for in improving this build process. Is like, does it make sense to containerize everything in terms of, you know, running this application? And one of the targets you can use for Packer is just target Docker instead, and I think it'll just build Docker images. So that would be a nice little like transition for us. You just change a couple things and kind of, I think it's be minimal effort. So that'll be cool.
Yeah. It sounds like you know, they had an over-engineered approach and then they ditched it. And so it sounds like you're just finding an avenue for something that works well enough for what you need, but it's not an over-engineered mess. Because that, I think that would be, especially as a contractor, that'd be the worst thing, right? You come in and like set up this gigantic system and then you leave and they're like, how do we do this?
Oh yeah, I'm absolutely trying to avoid that. Like I'm trying to avoid my, you know, web developer instinct of, oh, I'll just make a, you know, a gem for this or some web service or something.
Sure,
that,
yeah,
like now needs to be supported and whatever. So like, for example, one of the things I did was before, when you had the release, like the tarball for the actual application itself that runs the server application, normally you'd have to like SCP that up to the server. I'm like, well, that's stupid. You have to physically go get it and then upload it into the right spot, whatever. Like, no. So I made a new S3 bucket and then I made a releases folder. And, you know, so I put all the releases in a certain spot, versioned and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the Amazon image starts up, it has, you attach it like a profile, and the profile has permissions, like policies attached to it. And so when the instance starts up, it has permissions to access just that bucket, like no other buckets, just read-only access to that one specific bucket. And then it can just pull down the release and install it, like without you even having to do anything, right?
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. And so really all you need is like, you have this little variables JSON file and you just, it's not checked into Git, and you just give it like a bunch of, you know, API keys and like passwords and things that it needs to like do the initial setup, and it just kind of goes. So that's been pretty good so far. And I've, you know, I mentioned Docker, like they're currently on FreeBSD, and we're also, you know, want to move to Ubuntu just because it's just better supported for a lot of things. So like, that's another thing that we're doing. And
interesting.
And then the next big piece of this project is going to be like, so another step, manual step with this things right now is like, when you start up a server, like start up a new instance, you actually have to SSH in now and like tell it like who it is. It needs to identify, like it has a name and like a public IP address associated with it. And you have to configure it by hand. And like, that's obviously not going to work for auto scaling, right?
Sure.
So I'm trying to find a good happy medium of like, how can a server, as soon as it comes up, identify who it is, register itself with like the home, you know, database, and then you know, come up by itself with no intervention. So that's going to be a combination of like using metadata, so like tags that are attached to that instance when it comes up. You can read those pretty easily. And then some local scripting that's going to have to like talk to EC2 and, you know, just figure out some things. So still working that out, but that's going to feel really good. It's honestly not that far off, but it's going to be really cool when you can just like have a pool, auto scaling group of things, and you just like, oh, I want 5 of these now. And they just appear, right? Like, that's the dream.
Yeah. It's the node discovery setup sounds like it would be huge benefit to them, because they have a you know, a boost in traffic, and you need to scale up the servers. It would really suck to be like, hold on, I'm turning this one on. Okay, now I gotta turn another one on, and okay, now we have the third one up. You know, it seems like,
oh yeah, but and by the way, like, yeah, so what they do now is like they just over provision, right?
Sure.
Like there's 5 days of the week there's lots of traffic, but overnight there's no traffic, on weekends there's no traffic. So like they're just wasting electricity, wasting money, right? In addition to, you know, just having this slow build process. So that's going to be huge. We can tie that into the metrics, and so it automatically scale up and down. Like, that will be cool. And they actually have a unique kind of problem. It's not really a problem, it's a requirement. So in order for this screen sharing stuff to work, you need to be able to like connect directly to these servers, like over SSL, TCP, right?
Mm-hmm.
But lots of outgoing firewalls will just like block stuff like that outright.
Sure.
And so they have registered like blocks of IPs in each region. And they say, if you're having trouble, just whitelist these IPs in your firewall, your company's firewall, whatever, and then it'll work. So when a server comes up, not only does it have to like, it basically has to pick an unused IP address from that pool and then like assign it to itself, and then like phone home and say like, hey, I'm running, you know?
Mm.
And so that's going to take a little, I think it can be done with just some kind of EC2 commands, you know, basically list all the IPs, find one that's not available, or find the one that is available and just grab it.
Sure.
But then there's like, there's a race condition there. Cause like if you're scaling up, you might be starting like a bunch of instances at once. And I don't know, I haven't quite figured that out yet, but
yeah. So the thing that popped in my head earlier, and I was debating asking this question because really, I'm not super knowledgeable on the subject, but, it seems to me like, you know, like something like Kubernetes or, an equivalent package. I can't think of the term for it right now. But a thing that kind of like is made for that, I guess, if you're pulling in a system like Kubernetes, it seems to me like it might do a very specific thing that you need it to do that you're having to do right now, but maybe you don't want to inherit everything else that comes with it.
Yeah, that's possible. I haven't really explored the container options yet, mostly because I just kind of want to change as few things as possible.
Smart.
You know, like change one thing at a time, right?
Yeah.
I'm coming into the system, I don't really understand why or what things are necessarily, even though I can make them work. So like as I get some more knowledge about this and like understand what pieces need to exist, you know, just again, change one thing at a time. We have this manual process, let's get it streamlined, and then we can actually like make something that's better, right?
No, that's a really, really good answer, and I'm glad you answered it that way, because it's funny because when I was asking about like pulling in a whole thing, it's like pulling in a whole thing, like it's a whole thing, it's a whole ecosystem almost in and of itself that you'd have to pull in. And the way you answered that, I thought was really awesome. You said, "No, I'm new around here. I'm not super familiar, and so it makes sense to me to make small incremental changes as I go, as opposed to pulling in this giant dependency and doing too much at one time." Which is, I don't know, that's really smart. That's wise to me. That seems like, hey, you've probably been in a different situation before and you've learned from it or seen someone else do something like that. And it's funny because coming from the front end world, if we're having to solve a problem, we usually just go look around for a thing and we just pull it in without checking about how many dependencies it has, how big is the payload. You know, obviously it's a little bit different, but the concept to me feels very, very similar. And I think it was maybe a couple of weeks ago, I think I was messaging you. I was looking for a very specific thing that I needed done. And so I was looking around at packages, and the first thing I did was checked how many dependencies it had and how big it was. I think that was you, right? And I was like, how this one, I need this one thing done, and every package that is doing it is depending on like 12 other packages. And so I go and look at the source code because I just want to see how it's done. And then I have to go to another repo and I look at the source code there. Then I have to go to another repo because it's like one function depends on one function depends on one function. They're just pulling it in.
Mm-hmm.
It's driving me nuts. But no, that was a really, really good answer. I like that answer a lot.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I didn't really think about it that way, but yeah, it probably comes from a place of, I mean, not to like pat myself on the back, but it just comes from experience, right?
Yeah.
Like, actually, this is a really funny anecdote. When I was working at Agilent Technologies, and I was doing the firmware design for our spectrum analyzers, right? These benchtop equipment. And I wish I could remember exactly what it was, but I'd probably been there about like 8 months or a year or something. And I was pretty heavily into like actually developing features and bug fixes and stuff at that point. Like I was pretty deeply involved. And we made an improvement on some feature that a particular customer needed. And well, actually, no, I was arguing against it. And my boss was like, well, why wouldn't you want to make this change? Like this change is obviously better. And I was like, yeah, but it's different and people hate change.
Right.
Like customers hate it when you change things, even if they're better. Like that just means it's going to break something. Like there's a great XKCD comic where it's like, I wish I could remember it, but it's basically like, you know, there's a bug in some like Vim where you hold down the space bar for 5 seconds and your CPU overheats.
Oh.
And so they fix it, but then like if someone files a bug report, it's like, we're using that to heat our house or something. Right?
Like, yeah.
I totally butchered that, but we'll put that in the show notes.
I got it.
The point being, it's really easy to want to make things better and do it all at once, especially when you're like the quote unquote new guy and you're coming in from, you know, coming in at Mach 1 on this like company that's been doing things for a billion years. And it's that way for a certain reason. And they're like, oh, this is crap, I can do this better. And you just want to just rip it all up.
Yeah.
You really, really, really have to resist that temptation.
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of friend of the show, Drew. He just got his first dev job not too long ago, and he's working for a consulting firm, and they're using ColdFusion, and they have like their own CMS that they built that's powered by ColdFusion. And that was an interesting thing that he would talk to me about, you know, so he would mention something, some tool that they're using. And my first thought was like, oh, I haven't thought about that in a long time. And what's funny is that was my first thought, like, oh, it's that, you know, I thought of like, oh, I started using B after that. And then I started using C after B. But what's cool is that they have clients, they pay the bills, the people that work there are paid and they're taken care of and things are fine. And yeah, so anyway, he's been working on front end for a while. And so he comes in and he, you know, it's to the point where he even knows that some things are outdated, might not be the right term, but just older tools. But he's like, hey, you know, it seems to work. And it was cool that he realized that he shouldn't come in and just like try changing all this stuff. He's like, I'm going to learn how they do it. I'm going to learn their way of working and then try to make things better one thing at a time as I go, instead of coming in and blowing things up, which sometimes is the it's what we want to do. You know, we want to pull all the coolest, the toys that we like to work within, rather than really just kind of focusing on the end goal. And some of it's like developer ergonomics, you know, but yeah, that I don't know. I like your answer.
I think that's also just important. Like, forget about the engineering and software engineering angle of it. It's important just for, you know, relations with people. Like, you don't want to pretend like come in and like act like you know everything and be a hotshot, and that's just a bad first impression, you know.
It is, yeah.
So yeah, that's basically the approach. And actually, that was an interesting point you brought up, because like Packer is a relatively lightweight tool. Like the docs, there's not much to it. It gives you a way to like do things in a nice way with some very, very basic tooling around it. But it's very flexible in the sense that you can literally do anything with it. Like you can run any scripts, any shell scripts, any files, any you know, cloud hosting solution. But what it actually does is not that much. And like we talked about dependencies. Sure, there's always going to be like software dependencies, but like there's also the mental dependencies, right? Mm-hmm. I don't want to write a whole bunch of like special customized Ruby scripts, because like nothing else in this that this company does is in Ruby. Like no one's going to be able to maintain that when I disappear. You know, they use Python primarily for kind of those kind of applications. And so I'm like, well, and again, what we're coming from is literally just like shell script, like old school shell scripting.
Yeah.
Like not even bash, just shell. So trying not to rock that boat too much as well, and just trying to use a tool for a job. You can get very, very far with just the basic Unix tools, turns out.
Yeah, I mean, turns out.
I actually have this kind of internal conflict right now. So I mentioned this server registration issue. So when a server comes up, how does it identify itself? And like in my head, there's two main approaches. You can have a script that you basically just upload to the server and it just runs. And kind of, it might have some downsides in the sense that like, I don't know, it's not like a central source of truth in the sense that like every time you start a new server, it's going to run the script over and over again. Whereas on the flip side of that, you could have just a little tiny web service, that just a little Phoenix, you know, JSON only API thing that's just running locally and like, or you know, running on the LAN. And when a server starts up, it like phones home and is like, hey, I'm awake, give me an IP address. And then it like spits back everything that it needs to start up. That's appealing from a software engineering perspective. It's like, it's kind of a very targeted approach, but at the same time, it's like, okay, something else I have to develop, something else I have to host, something else that someone else to know about. It has to be running. It has to be working, right?
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to just like, just run the script and be done.
Yeah. I'm feeling more and more like that. The bigger DK gets, the more features that we add, the more I'm just like, let's see how simple can we make this. Obviously not to subtract from the feature or usefulness of the feature, but let's see how far we can take things. And I mean, a good example of this is when I first got the MVP, it was using Elasticsearch, and that was it was a lot to kind of like weed all that stuff out, and also all the other things that needed to be weeded out at the same time. And so I was like, well, I mean, Postgres has a pretty good plain text search. Let's just use that instead. So I dropped a whole dependency, which allowed me to really focus in on some other stuff, which in turn made it easier for me to get things stable, which was the main priority, you know? And that was, it was a hard choice because like Elasticsearch is powerful and it's very, very good. Obviously it's designed to solve faceted searching and plain text searching and stuff, but we could get by with what we needed with a simpler setup. And so that's what I did. And we actually, I think this last week we just reintroduced Elasticsearch. So that's running in production, but it was to the point where we actually needed it. We were kind of like getting to the limits of what we were capable of with Postgres's searching. And I mean, granted, I'm not like a Postgres wizard. So at that point, it was easier for me to make things better by pulling in dependency instead of diving deeper into something like Postgres plain text searching. So I don't know, it made my life easier for a long time. So now I have to know about, okay, an index could fail, or like when a product is updated, that means that if that index fails, that means that I could start getting messages like, hey, I changed the price of this thing and then it didn't change. So we just took some precautions to make sure that if that failed, we were notified. But it seems to be working out in the grand scheme of things, like having that extra focus in without having to know about a dependency as big as Elasticsearch, it really allowed me to spend a lot of time somewhere else.
That's cool. And yeah, it bought you enough time to get where you needed to be so you could actually spend some time and have some more context for actually developing that feature. So that's cool. That works out nice.
Yeah. So I've been trying to use that approach more. Like you're saying, it's from a software development standpoint, it's less, the less you have to know about almost the better, the less you have to worry about. Like really the less that wakes you up at night and you're wondering if it's working, the better.
Oh, yeah. And actually, this kind of ties into what we were talking about last week with like side projects, you know, kind of pet projects, in that it's actually nice to have that sort of outlet for trying new things, greenfield things, new technologies. Like you don't want to be using some tech stack for the first time in a very large project, right? You want to be able to play with it first and like understand its shortcomings and how to use it and whatever. So like side projects are a great resource for that, you know?
Yeah, it is very true. I've been, man, I don't want to say this. I like Elixir so much. I've been hankering to try a different language out.
Okay, tell me more.
And I don't know why. I don't know. That's it. That's all there is.
That's it?
No, I don't really have a problem that Elixir solves my Bthink problem perfectly because I just have it on a $10 server with all my other websites. And it works, and I don't need Redis. I don't need any other dependencies. I just you know, using Gen servers to send the notifications, and it works great. And it does what I need it to, so it just kind of hangs out there. But I don't know, not that I have a lot of time or anything, but yeah, I've been hearing a lot of people talk about Go for a while, so I've been interested in that, but I don't really have a problem that I would use to solve, like Go specifically, because it seems like it's not necessarily suited for web apps. There are frameworks out there, but it seems like it's more of like a tooling language, right? And I don't really have any use cases for that right now, but I don't know. I've been using Elixir for 2 years, I think. Yeah, I think 2 years now. And that's maybe before that, Ruby was the language I used the most. So I don't know if I'm getting like grass is greener. Not that I would rewrite DK or anything by any means. I love Elixir, but just getting curious maybe is what I'm trying to say.
No, I think it's actually cool to think about because like playing and learning with a language is literally as simple as like just downloading it and playing with it at this point, right? It's so easy and there's so much out there. You can just literally just have an hour or two to burn on a Sunday afternoon. It's like, oh, I wonder what Go's like. Oh, I heard Rust is cool. Oh, what, you know, or you go the functional direction, like Haskell or whatever, like learn the pure functional foundations on which like Elixir is kind of interlaying or built. Seems interesting to like wrap your head around those kind of things and just play with it. Like you don't have to have a goal in mind. You just have to, you know, play with it. I don't think there's anything wrong with that at all. I don't think there has to be any commitment or just to be total throwaway, you know?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I started working on an iOS app for Bthink and iOS client. And I don't really like, well, I don't want to say I dislike Swift. I find Swift confusing, to be honest.
Okay. Anything in particular or just not used to thinking in a certain way?
It feels very verbose. Maybe that's not the right way to put it. I granted half of it's Xcode. I don't like Xcode as I'm learning. I don't like it at all. It feels clunky and it feels like there's always, I had some crazy bugs happening when I was working with it, which compounded it was almost like I was learning Rails over again. Like, is this Ruby or is it Rails that's screwing up right now or that I'm not familiar with, and that's what's causing the problem. So maybe a lot of it's Xcode, but I just really just wanted to be writing Elixir when I was writing Swift. So yeah, I don't know. I've been looking at Crystal a little bit. Crystal seems interesting.
Cool.
Yeah. But I'm not sure what'll happen. Really, I just started learning Xcode and Elixir, or Xcode and Swift, so that way, as a couple of people that I know are learning Swift, I can kind of help solve problems for them or eliminate possible issues. So, be able to tell, is it Xcode or is it Swift? You know,
sure,
kind of help weed out those issues. But I don't know that I'll stick with that because I was frustrated. Maybe I should stick with it for that reason.
Yeah, I mean, you can just go into it with no commitment at all. I mean, like me. Learning Rails was just like, oh, it's already installed on my machine. I'll just see what the heck it is. and, you know, so began that, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah, we'll see. I talked about it, I want to keep launching side projects, and Bthink needs a lot of design work. And that's one way. There's just so many ways I need to grow, and I just have trouble sticking with one of them. I think that's the real problem here, is that I need to be able to follow through on some stuff, but... Anyhow, we're back to my therapy session again. At the end of it, it all comes full circle.
Always does. It always does.
Yeah. No, it's cool. I'm glad that, because you mentioned that you're going to be working with Glance a while back to me, and it sounds like you're enjoying it, and it sounds like things are going well, and that's always the best case, I think. So I'm happy to hear all of that.
Yeah, and it's kind of a new... It's stuff I've done before, but I've never really focused hard on it. You know, obviously, I've just had to learn... doing DevOps stuff through just running our current business, right? But actually doing it as a job and being able to focus on it and spend time and effort, you know, reading and learning and, you know, actually just doing that as your job to not as just a means to an end, but this is what I'm doing, right? This is my goal. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to do something different, honestly, you know? It's nice to have a side gig that's not just programming.
Yeah, I bet.
Just fleshing out the skill set, and you know, I'm still learning as I go. You know, I'm not a professional by any means. I have some experience, but everything's new and different and changing all the time. So I'm just willing to kind of learn as I go. But you know, again, making sure I'm using kind of the right tools for the job, and so. Yeah, I'm really enjoying it so far. And I think it's kind of low hanging fruit in the sense that it's a lot of gain for not a lot of effort. So that makes me look good.
Yeah. That's awesome. I'm happy to hear that.
Well, I kind of monopolized the time here today, but looks like we should probably wrap it up. I do want to hear more about your refactoring and fun company stuff.
Oh, yeah. You want to hear about my custom-made Stripe API client?
Is that a teaser? Did you just drop a teaser for next week?
Yeah.
Ooh.
I did. I did do that. It's actually just an HTTP poison client. So it's nothing crazy, but it works. It works really well, and it solved my problems. So, but yeah, we'll have to talk about that next week.
Well, I'll be interested to hear about that next week.
I will tell you all about it, given that I ship it next week. Because I wanted to ship it this week and I didn't. That's how things go. But thanks for being my therapist for the hour, and thanks for everyone for coming along for the ride.
A group therapy session.
It is a group therapy session, and by that I mean talk to us on Twitter and wherever else you want to talk to us. I mainly am on Twitter, I guess, but I do hang out on Spectrum, and I have an email address, and you can get that if you want. To talk about.
And he has very affordable rates.
Yes, I do have very affordable rates, free. Actually, my rate is that you listen to me after I listen to you. That's the rate. But no, we really do appreciate any feedback, and appreciate interactions. And I actually had someone reach out to me on Twitter this week and said, hey, thanks for shouting out the drum stretches. And so people are stretching the wrists out, which is great. It makes me happy because that means that there's less wrist pain in the world.
The world needs a little less pain in general.
It does. Yeah.
Well, you can also, in addition to spectrum.chat, you can also reach us on Twitter at DNC Show. And then Sean is Sean Washbot and I'm Shrockwell.
Yep. And our show notes are available on that little server I mentioned earlier that BeThink is also on at dnc.show. So if you have any, if you heard anything interesting and you're looking for the link, it's usually in there. And sometimes I put other things like pictures in there too. So check those out.
As I mentioned, as always, we're always hanging out in spectrum.chat. We've got a discussion for the episodes as well as the show notes over there. And you can talk with us if you have any questions or comments. We'd love to hear that.
Yeah, we've got a Ruby community. There is a Ruby community. We've got an Elixir community though. And also a Vue community that people are hanging out on, sharing things on. So if you're interested in that, come hang out there. Also, there's a job board at spec.fm/job. So if you're looking for a job, you should go check that out. Last time I looked at it, Envision was looking to hire a bunch of people and they seem like a really cool company. So if you're interested in working at Envision, go check out the job board. And as always, thanks to Spec for having us. They've been with, you know, they've been with the show since the beginning, obviously. And I'm grateful to Sarah and everybody over at Spec for hosting the show and working with us. And if you haven't checked out the other shows on the network, you should check them out. They've got Fragmented, which is an Android developer podcast. There's Swift Unwrapped, which is about Swift. So maybe I need to force myself to spend some time there.
Yeah, man, get over there.
I need to get over there to Swift Unwrapped. But yeah, there's also Design Details, which is a great show about design. And there's other shows like Developer Tea. And if you're needing to kind of hang out for a couple of minutes and think introspectively about programming, Developer Tea is a good place to do that.
A lot of introspection on this week for us.
Yeah.
And as always, this episode of Does Not Compute was edited by Mikhail Delport and produced by Sarah Jackson. Thanks to those guys. And thanks to you, Sean. And I will talk to you next week.
I'll talk to you later.
See ya. Thanks again to Datadog for sponsoring today's episode. Datadog really is the performance analytics solution that's missing from your application. With their powerful trace filtering, their deeply integrated metrics, and a beautiful dashboard, it's easier than ever before to identify, analyze, and resolve performance issues in your application. You can start a free trial today at datadog.com/doesnotcompute, and Datadog will send you a free t-shirt for creating a dashboard. Again, start your free trial today at datadog.com/doesnotcompute.